achieve the objectives which they have held on to for decades, which is one, dismembering of Russia to gain control of Russia's natural resources. Two, go back to Halford Mackinder's mantra of 1904. He who controls the heartland, which is Central Asia, controls the world.
Saruman, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, let's just...
I should ask you say good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, good morning to me. We're going to jump right in here. The whole thing with Syria really more or less imploding. What? That just really caught me by surprise. Let's start with there. What happened and what's going on?
Yeah, great question. Turkey's intelligence was in touch with America's intelligence and the UK's intelligence since they have been training and financing the terrorists, various groups in northern Syria. Erdogan has problems at home. His standing in the electorate has collapsed, and he lost the election. He needed a foreign policy success with Israel and America, and to a lesser degree, the UK, through MI6. And what he was after was to start recreating the Ottoman Empire. Aleppo and northern Syria was part of it. So what we don't know is, in return for Turkey's support in the invasion orchestrated by Israel and America, he would get Aleppo and parts of that province back again as Turkish territory, thus starting to rebuild the Ottoman Empire. Why did the Syrian army and the Assad regime collapse so swiftly? It was due partly because the army was being paid practically nothing. The ordinary soldiers, like $7 a month, not enough to live on. And more importantly, Assad never accepted the advice that Iran and Russia gave him to regroup the army, refurbish the army, and he would not accept that there were problems developing in the north, in the Idlib province. So towards the end of November, before the invasion started, Assad visited Moscow and saw Putin on the 29th of November. And it was made clear to Assad that the situation had got out of hand and there was nothing that Russia could do to support him. And the same message was given to Iran. Why did Assad not take the advice? And what I pieced together, he was trying to get close to America because the Arab League had accepted Syria back into the fold, and therefore he thought that he would get support from the UAE and Saudi Arabia. But America had a different, and Israel had a different game. So when the invasion started, there was practically no resistance. And another reason why there was no resistance is that the military was paid off. So if you've been getting $7 a month and you suddenly receive 200 or 400, it's a fortune. So that was basically why and how the Assad regime collapsed so swiftly. It's the consequences that are really important. The government is run by the terror group HTS, in short, and headed by Gulani, who is a known terrorist, killed Americans, and is now the head, or the puppet head, of the government in Syria. There's an old saying, if Syria collapses, there will be no Palestine. So this leads us to Israel. Israel is doing to Syria what it did, is doing to Lebanon and Gaza, bombing the hell out of the country. Israel says this is defensive, but it, in all probability, it's not defensive, it's offensive. And that is the start of creating greater Israel. So another important consequence is that the autocratic governments in the Gulf are looking at what is happening in Syria. A government run by a bunch of terrorists, and they must be thinking, are we next? Is Jordan now threatened? Jordan has enough problems as it is. And then you've got Iraq coming into the equation. Now Israel is boasting, we've annihilated Hamas, we have annihilated Hezbollah, we have only the head of the state left, Iran. The big question is Iran going to see whether Trump will suggest some form of agreement, or will Iran say, the time has come when we have to teach Israel a hard lesson once and for all? There are rumors that Iran has sent messages, possibly through Oman, to Washington or to the Trump administration, saying, what are you going to offer us? my thinking is that given the fact that Trump dislikes Iran, one of Trump's major objectives is to disrupt, if not destroy, BRICS by, for instance, offering Russia some form of terms over Ukraine, basically on Russia's terms, in return for breaking their strategic alliance with China. And to give an example, I don't know whether this is correct, but proffering little resistance should China decide to invade or blockade Taiwan. Then you come to Iran. Trump would like to isolate Iran and or do a deal which would prohibit Iran sending any energy to China. The disruption to BRICS has already started in Brazil. The powerful ministries are anti-BRICS. President of the country, Lula, probably knows that if he upset Washington, it would only take a telephone call and Lula would be back in jail. So, bottom line, one of Trump's foreign policy objectives is to disrupt, if not destroy, BRICS before the group matures enough to become a rival to America's hegemony and the domination of the US dollar. Chaos reigns in Syria. There is some thinking that Iran and Russia at some point in the future will actually attack Israel to get rid of the government and to get rid of Israel's involvement in the country. Now, I've got no facts to support that, but that is a rumor stroke story that is doing the rounds. But basically, Iran and Russia left Syria because there was nothing that they could do. And even if they did mount an attack on the invading forces, which were supported by Israel and America, and defeated them, which they could have done, and they would have started an even bigger mess globally. So, the outlook for Syria is pretty awful. I know families here in Dubai. One family whose father has factories in Egypt and spends most of his time in Egypt, but her mother still lived in Syria, wealthy family, but they got out as soon as the invasion hit Aleppo. Lots of families wanted to get out and be caught because the airport had been shut down.
So, you mentioned the army was paid off, but I just want to go back there really quick. Were they paid off by the CIA?
It would have been CIA stroke Israel.
Okay.
And probably Turkey as well.
Yeah, that's... I'm sorry.
Children.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So then what does the map of the Middle East, what is that going to look like? And what my next question really was, and you somewhat addressed it, how much jeopardy is Jordan in?
Well, the first thing is that it's very likely that parts of the West Bank are going to be officially annexed by Israel, and they will throw out the Palestinians living there. So where do they go? Into Jordan? There are reports that the Jordanian government is the next one to fall. And as I said earlier, the reverberations will be throughout the Gulf.
Yeah.
Terrorist organization running Syria.
So this is all happening weeks before the inauguration. Is this happening under Biden's administration's hand and watch, or are they, is this part of Trump's plan?
No, I think that the powers behind the existing throne in Washington are desperate to achieve the objectives which they have held on to for decades, which is one, dismembering of Russia to gain control of Russia's natural resources. Two, go back to Halford Mackinder's mantra of 1904, he who controls the heartland, which is Central Asia, controls the world. And according to the mantra, or America's doctrine, you cannot have one or more countries controlling the heartland, because that will ultimately lead to the downfall of America's hegemony. And the third doctrine of these people, which may probably be supported by the new government, is expand Israel so that Israel can create greater Israel, and thus giving America its bridgehead into the Middle East. So the two are connected. Ukraine is connected with what's happening in the Middle East.
Yeah.
We should go back. Also should have mentioned that Ukraine was very involved in the training of these terrorist groups. And Ukrainian special forces training these guys. So who was behind the Ukrainian government? Washington.
Yeah, you actually answered a question there and just tying in, you threaded the needle very well. And this is all happening right before inauguration. So let's talk about that, is the escalation with Ukraine and Russia. It seems like, I read somewhere, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Trump is actively talking to Putin or the Russian, the Trump team is talking to the Russian team, not to escalate this more. What's your opinion on this? Not so much. Yeah, what's your opinion on the escalation there? Because from what I understand, for all intents and purposes, Ukraine is pretty much over. It just makes absolutely no sense of an escalation with the shape that they're in, other than to suck us into a war.
Well, we come back to the powers behind the throne in Washington. They are desperate to stop. They are desperate to ensure that their decades-long objectives won't be broken by the incoming Trump administration. So they've been pushing with false flag operations to try to force Putin to attack a NATO country. But he's not fallen for it. Instead, what is going on is that he is attacking the infrastructure of Ukraine to an extent that, like, the last count I had was something like 4/5 of power generation and distribution had been destroyed. If there are any more 80 ACMs fired into Russia, I think what is likely the response to be is that Russia will use hypersonic missiles to destroy NATO bases in Ukraine.
And will that be viewed as a direct attack on NATO then?
Flip of the coin, I don't know.
Oh, God.
So, but I think let's look at the other side. Let us say that when Trump is in the White House and a ceasefire is arranged, the question then is, how will the Ukrainian situation be resolved?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest issue for Putin is the future security of Russia. In a few years' time, America is bound to have acquired hypersonic technology, or the equivalent, thus taking a boundary line across the Dnieper River will not give his radar systems enough forewarning of a hypersonic or other attack on Russia. He will need the full landmass of Ukraine. And I think this will be the main sticking point in negotiations between Washington and Moscow. The future security of Russia. Putin does not trust any piece of paper that the West writes on. He will not allow NATO or any foreign troops to be patrolling the borders. So I think that by the time that negotiations start, Putin will be in control of not only East Ukraine, but West Ukraine. And if you read carefully the recent speeches of Putin and Lavrov, they are hinting at it. Security.
It seems like Russia and Putin are going to have all the cards then in this negotiation.
They're certainly going to have the most of them, yes. And don't forget that Putin has his own neocons. And they're going to be pretty tough on concessions that Russia will give. And equally, Trump has his own anti-Russia groups in Congress and the Senate. So it's not going to be an easy, oh, we end the war and everything will be fine thereafter. Mm-hmm. Not going to be the case.
Yeah, so let's pivot a little bit to China here. You mentioned two things. You mentioned BRICS and the currency. And then we talked briefly about China's escalation and aggression, especially with Taiwan. Let's start this with China. The question with China, is this just becoming an opportunity that they see? Or their security reasons?
This is a very difficult question to answer. There are vibes that the decks have been cleared in Beijing for an invasion stroke blockade of Taiwan, but no decision has been taken. And yet we read reports that in recent days, Taiwan is reporting the largest naval and air force, Chinese air force and naval forces surrounding Taiwan since 1996. Okay. Now, whether this is portends an attack on Taiwan, I have no idea. But tensions are certainly rising. We know that for many years, President Xi has been preparing China for a war. One example being that some private sector companies have had to allocate factory floor space for the production of PLA goods.
So, thread this with the BRICS then. Is this Is this all tied together too because of of Washington trying to not only disrupt but stop the BRICS from launching its own currency? And now there's somewhere.
I think it's all linked to this big picture that Washington wants to retain its hegemony and the authority that the US dollar gives to Washington. Because if you lose the dollar's domination, you've lost your biggest tool in retaining your hegemony. So I think it's all linked. It all comes back to really the old policies that Washington introduced in 1946.
Next question. Talk to me, and it makes sense, I guess. Well, let me ask you this. Let's talk about drones, all the sightings of drones on the East Coast of the U.S.
And Iran's getting blamed for this.
Of course.
It's always Russia. Strange is happening, or anything's wrong with the election or wrong with the economy, it's Russia's fault. But this time, it's Iran. Notice is changing from Russia to Iran.
It's almost like we try to float a story to see how it sticks. Okay, anybody's buying that it's Iran. So it's like, oh, that story will be out of the news in the next 24 to 48 hours.
But I think, hilarity aside, I mean, I was told months ago that the powers behind the Washington throne again may well cause mayhem in America to disrupt inauguration.
Yeah.
By, and this is, I have no idea the truth behind it, but it's something we should consider, that some airplanes may be hit on landing or taking off by handheld missiles.
So that really leads me to what you thought, and I want to be careful here too, not to say things matter-of-factly, but all of this, and I mean this, our entire conversation is happening right before the inauguration. Is there going to be an inauguration?
Let's answer the question this way. This group of people, whoever they are, because really we're talking about not the neocons, but who's behind them. This group of people will do everything they can to prevent President Trump from getting into the White House. Because if he's in the White House, then their long-term planning is shot to ribbons.
So let's assume for a second he's in the White House. He gets in. Are you optimistic then that things have begun to change and the plan is thwarted, if you would?
That's a very difficult question to answer because there's so many diverse forces at work. My own personal guess, and it's nothing more than a guess, is that one, negotiations over the future of Ukraine are going to be very protracted and very tough. What Putin is looking at is not Ukraine itself, but where Ukraine sits within a restructured Eurasia group. On the Middle East, my guess is that at some point in 2025, there will be a war between Israel and Iran.
There would be a nuclear war.
There won't be a nuclear war.
No?
I don't think so.
Thank God.
That being said,
they're too nuclear, but, and Israel holds...
Let me paint to you, please, a scenario that Larry Johnson, ex-CIA...
I've had him on.
Yes, I know him.
Yeah.
I want to get the right... This is what he wrote 12th or 13th of this month. If the Netanyahu government decides that it stands a good chance of delivering a knockout blow to the mullahs in Iran, I think the Israelis will pull the trigger. Here is the problem. If Alistair Crook is right, Iran stands a good chance of defeating an Israeli attack. While Iran has vowed to retaliate against Israel for its October attack, Tehran has deferred carrying out new strikes, most likely following the counsel from Russia, to exercise restraint and build support in the global south. Unfortunately, the West has interpreted Iranian patience with weakness and fear. I believe the most dangerous scenario is as follows. Iran defeats an Israeli attack and then moves immediately to launch a massive missile counterstrike on Israeli targets. If Iran inflicts major destruction on Israel, then there will be an enormous pressure on the Biden administration to come to their rescue and carrying out new attacks on Iran. Given the new military relationship between Iran and Russia, this could escalate rapidly into something more than an isolated regional war.
Yeah.
Now, whether that would be right or wrong, but what it does do, it just illustrates the risks that the world and financial markets face.
Yeah. And this has happened 30 days before inauguration.
Or in 2025.
Yeah. It seems like it's all coming to a head.
Oh, God.
Well, Simon, I guess we should ask
him first.
What are your final thoughts, really, just for this conversation going into between now and January 20th? What's your antenna and what are you aware of?
Well, I think all one can see is escalation. Yeah, the question is, how big will that escalation be? If we're looking at the optimistic side, over Ukraine, the escalation will be confined to Ukraine. That's the good news. The bad news is if it extends outside Ukraine. On the Middle East, the good news, or the more optimistic scenario, is that the wars in Gaza, West Bank, Lebanon, Syria, are confined to those regions and don't expand into neighboring countries. Bad news is that they will.
Yeah. We'll just have to see.
Pick your choice.
All right, Simon. How do people find you? They want to do business with you. I'm a huge fan of their work. But how do they do that?
Yeah, two ways. Either email me at simon@shss.com or simply go on to simon-hunt.com.
I'll put that in the show notes. Whenever I have you on, I think this is the third time now, people comment about how you're a national treasure. My comment, I haven't said this. It's like, well, you're not as... It's hard to be a national treasure. You are for the UK, I guess. But you are a treasure. You are a treasure, I would
say. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your kind words.
But I enjoy... enjoy is the wrong word. I enjoy spending time with you. That's the right word.
Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoy this time. Your information is very provocative. And so I want to really, really...
Well, what you really should say is not the information, it's the conclusion.
If the conclusion, that's the thing. That scares the hell out of me. But I want to thank you so much for your time. I'll put all the contact info in the show notes, and we'll have you on again really soon.
Super. And we've talked before. Happy Christmas.
Yes. Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.